shy little Uber. Liver, liver, liver.
Okay, it is As the Worm Turns. Good evening. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and Lance is off tonight, and we're here with, I've got two special guests really excited about tonight's show. I've got Claudia King and Judy Livingston, both from the Paonia Historical Society, Paonia Museum, and we're going to talk about some history of Paonia and also relating to fruit picking and the orchards. We all know how much we love our fruit here, and there's some fascinating history, so I know you're all going to enjoy hearing about this. And I think this history goes from the North Fork all the way down to Montrose. Montrose has been known to grow some great fruit, so support your Studio M. And you can call 527-4868, 1-866 KBNF now to make your pledge and also to just join our conversation here tonight with Judy and Claudia. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. Good evening.
Great to have you here. And we've been chatting before the show and just so excited to share some of the things that I learned about Paonia and the North Fork. Fruit came to the valley pretty early. Paonia was settled what year?
Claudia? 1881.
1881, gosh.
And Samuel Wade came in with Enos Hotchkiss, and Enos did the Hotchkiss thing while Samuel Wade had already spotted a place up here in the Paonia area that he laid claim to. And he laid claim from the main street of Paonia back down Matthews Lane, and Clark lay claim from our Grand Avenue clear up to the east end of town.
Okay, so some of the main settlers there. Judy,
yes,
you have...
Yes, indeed. And we credit Samuel Wade with bringing fruit, which he got at the railhead, and carried in a wagon over Black Mesa. And he also brought with him peonies, which Paonia was named for, and it was supposed to be peony, but when he sent it into the state, they spelled it incorrectly, and that's how Paonia came to be about.
A typo, so
a
to speak.
Typo.
Major.
Yeah. So when you say he brought fruit over Black Mesa, he was bringing fruit trees to plant. He recognized this as a fertile valley, or...
He was. The river had no banks. It just flowed sort of indiscriminately over the valley floor, and so it deposited lots of rich silt, and he saw this, and so he saw that there was this opportunity to have fruit orchards here.
And he was very successful as a fruit grower.
Himself, right.
Himself. And along with his orchards, many other people came and established orchards as well. Claudia, do you have some names that people might recognize?
Well, you know, I was just going to mention that W.S. Coburn, too, and Samuel Wade took our fruit to the Chicago World's Fair in 1893, and they won 6 first places on fruit from the valley, and that created a lot of interest with people that wanted to purchase fruit from here. And the railroad arrived in 1902. And then at that time, of course, we had lots of brokers that they rode that railroad and came to rooming houses in Paonia and purchased the fruit.
Yeah, really good fruit. Judy, you were mentioning there's a trophy at the museum that relates to the...
Yes, it was from another World's Fair, and it's quite an elegant trophy. And it was won by some brothers, the McKee brothers, and they took fruit again. And it was one of many trophies that people from Paonia received in the fruit industry, because it was exceptional, and there was a great deal of it.
Right. I want to talk about that in just a minute. I'm going to give the phone numbers 527-4868-1866 KVNF now. It's Studio M Day, and you can make a pledge for Studio M, and you can call and maybe share a memory that you have about fruit or the history of your area here on the Western Slope. You know, one of the things that strikes me is talking about the quality of fruit, because we still talk about that, how great the taste of our vegetables are and our fruit, and just so much sweeter.
And I think that that has something to do with the altitude, because we do know with the wineries that the different wines that are here now, they do have different flavors depending on what elevation that those vineyards are at.
Yeah, it's interesting, the little microclimates that occur here, too, just as you say, Claudia, just as a maybe 200, 300, 500 different feet, you know?
And that does make a difference.
Yeah.
Especially, I think, in the fruit industry, where it's so critical that fruit doesn't freeze. And it's interesting that while fruit may go ahead and be produced on pick and mesa, if it's on another mesa, it may freeze. So, yeah, there are different versions of climate right here.
And it does have a lot to do with the winds that blow up and down the river. And out on Lambert Mesa, there are a few orchards out there that a lot of times escape the freeze just because of the way the wind currents are
sure.
in there.
Okay, so good weather and lots of fruit here. I mean, the orchards, the number of orchards were incredible. Can you talk about that? Paint us a picture there.
The valley was completely covered with orchards. They were everywhere, on every mesa, clear down in town. They were just masses of them everywhere. And it was a beautiful sight.
I can remember coming back from college. That would have been in 1958, at the time that the fruit was in bloom, and just these vast, beautiful, the pinks from the peaches and the whites from the cherries, and the valley just in bloom. It just was, you know, just so beautiful.
Wow.
And I think part of the reason that the fruit isn't as abundant as it once was is that originally when Samuel Wade came and all these orchards were being started, the climate was really ideal. And then in 1912, there was a big freeze. Claudia, do you want to talk about that?
And it was a devastating freeze because it literally froze the roots of most of the peaches that were in the valley. And so, of course, those all had to be replanted. Another thing that happened was that pests began to arrive. Originally, the fruit was clean, but the railroad probably did bring in some of the pests.
So that happened around 1912. What time of year was that freeze? Was it an early freeze? Or
I'm thinking it was about January.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard freeze.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that brought in and ushered in a new thing. We're talking all organic fruit here, right?
All
at
organic.
That period of time. Isn't that awesome? Mouth-watering.
Yes, it was.
527-4868-1866, KVNF now. You can join our conversation, and you can make a pledge for Studio M. You know, we've got some great listeners down there in Motown. And, you know, talking about the number of orchards and how fabulous that was, there were a lot of jobs, and there was a lot of work to get that fruit picked and to get it out to market.
That's very true. And because there weren't enough people locally to take care of all that, there were a lot of, let's see, today we would call them migrant workers, but that doesn't really fit what these people were. They were actually hobos. And they came in on the trains. And where did they stay, Claudia?
Well, you know, some of the orchards had the little cabins for their pickers, and so that would have been one place that they stayed. But I imagine there was a lot of camping out, too. But I was just thinking about myself. I was a little girl in the 40s, and my mother had cautioned me not to go downtown because it was not too safe with all of these people arriving into the community. And I lived over on Onagra, so I was really quite close to downtown.
Yeah, I hear that downtown was, you kind of had to be a little savvy walking down the street, especially if you're a woman.
And the downtown often ran till midnight. A lot of the restaurants were open.
Wow.
Because there was a shift, an evening shift, and that shift probably got off about, you know, 11 o'clock. And I know some of my dad's workers at the Palmer & Company, he was a fruit packer and shipper, my dad was, he would buy them something to eat downtown.
And unfortunately, they were somehow able to find places to drink as well. There were opportunities to do that here in Paonia. And we had a jail. It was located by Dependable Lumber, and it was a little, wasn't it white, Claudia? It was a very small jail, and when you didn't want to walk by there,
that was one of the things. So they put the rowdy hobos.
We were cautioned not to walk by the jail. And as I recall, I don't think it had windows. I think it just had an opening with bars on it.
Wrought iron bars of some sort.
But I don't remember too much about that. I was very young, but one of the memories I do have was when my sister and I were very little. My grandparents had cherry orchards on Pickin Mesa, and I remember staying there. We must have been only, I don't know, maybe 3 years old, and we woke up one night and we were terrified because we thought everything was on fire, and it was actually smudge pots in the orchard, and my grandfather was, you know, attempting to keep the fruit from freezing. And also, they did have workers who came in, and they had cabins for them to stay in while they were working there.
And Jill had brought up to us a question about German workers that came in World War II.
Yeah, well, there were so many different people that came in to pick fruit. Yeah.
And they were prisoners of war, and they actually worked in our orchards. And I think Judy has a story about her husband, Laddie, seeing the German workers.
He did. One of his earliest childhood memories when he was about 2 years old was he lived on Pickin Mesa at the time, and he remembers going out into the yard and seeing German prisoners with the guards around them with guns, and it was a very frightening thing for him to see at that age.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, ladies, you helped me to realize that the communities here were very self-contained because there wasn't a lot of transportation. I mean, the train actually ran from Somerset down to Delta at one point, and that's how you went to do your shopping in Delta. Is that correct?
That's right. You could get on that train probably about 8 o'clock in Somerset, and then I believe it returned from Delta at 5, so you would be back in Somerset, you know, in the evening.
But rather than shopping, Jill, I think probably people went on business trips.
Okay.
I think shopping would have been done locally.
Right here.
There was no need to leave town because we had everything that you needed was here. So, and I think it was probably a rare thing to go out of town to do any shopping.
Yeah, well, talk about that self-containment a little bit, because it was really a vibrant town, a lot of stores.
We had several drug stores. We had JCPenney's. We had
Montgomery Ward's.
Oh, my goodness. That's a blast from the past.
We had a couple of appliance stores. My parents had an appliance store here that they started after the Second World War.
First TV, Was it?
Yes, the first TV. my dad brought the first TV into town. He was an electrician and was involved in setting up whatever you do to get TVs into a town. And we actually had the first TV in Paonia, which was kind of fun.
I bet that was.
And yes, and there were several women's clothing shops.
Yes.
And it was everything that you needed was really right here. So there wasn't, not only was there not a reason, it was not, transportation wasn't as available. And
right.
To go to Grand Junction was a big deal.
And to Denver, even bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine
that drive
to Denver.
That was a rare occasion.
Now, we got McClure Pass in 1949, I believe. And so that did open up the Denver route. It was a little shorter at that point in time.
But McClure Pass was nothing like it is now. When you went first over the Muddy, nothing was paved, and McClure Pass was extremely steep with major switchbacks on it. It was quite a road.
A hairy drive.
Was a hairy drive.
And you can actually look up there and see some of those switchbacks.
You can still
really?
See them.
Once you get to the valley floor there on the other side, yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes me think of another memory. My aunt grew up here in Paonia along with my mother, and her eight siblings all graduated from Paonia High School, which is kind of cool.
Go Eagles.
Yeah. Anyway, my aunt married a man from California, and they were both school teachers, and they bought Chair Mountain Ranch when they were fairly young, and they would come every summer. And Chair Mountain Ranch was a dude ranch where people came and stayed. And then they'd go back to California to teach, but one year they decided to spend the winter there. Mm-hmm. And my parents and Jody and I went to their place for Thanksgiving over McClure Pass.
Oh.
And it snowed, and it was horrible. And I'll never forget my mother sat on the floorboards all the way home because she was so frightened. It was a bad road.
That's a great memory, Judy. Thanks for sharing that. I love being on a mountain pass and thinking what it was like when it wasn't paved or when it was just... Yeah, McClure can do that for you. So
yes, indeed.
Thank you for that. Okay, 527-4868-1866, KVNF Now. I know there's some good memories down there in Montrose of the same kind of things. So give us a ring and make your pledge for Studio M, or tell us what your memories are and join this conversation about a little bit of history in our area. Talking about transportation, just the numbers of trains that had to get the fruit out of this valley, it was significant. I mean, the trains were not running for coal at that time. They were packing fruit.
And there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cars of fruit that went out of here every summer. Claudia, you have some...
And there would be a report of that, from what went out from the packing plants, and we had the Union Fruit, which was right at the end of our main street. And we had Palmer & Company, and we had Paonia Marketing. And then Judy had mentioned that we had a lot of plants that are packing right on the fruit, located right on the properties. And the North Fork Fruit Growers Association in early times had packing houses at Roberts, Paonia, Alberta, which was Midway, Hotchkiss, and Colburn. So there was just a vast network, you know, of packing houses.
Yeah, and we're talking like 300 cars taking peaches out. You had some numbers like that, Claudia.
Oh,
they were just astounding.
And 300 from, I think that was the Union Fruit, and maybe 200 of apples. They also shipped things like potatoes and onions. Those would have been, you know, small car lots. But all of these plants had just railroad sidings next to them where the cars could just be, the refrigerator cars were just brought to that. And they were loaded, and then they were transferred back over to the main track.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you can still see them here in Paonia, the old fruit packing sheds, or some of them, just right along the track.
Yeah, and we have a wonderful history at the museum of the fruit packing here, and we have photographs of some of the fruit, and it was phenomenal. I mean, people holding potatoes that you could hardly lift, and it was just really amazing when you see those photographs and think about what it must have been like here.
And that just brings up something I'd like to mention about the river. It wasn't contained in any banks. It just kind of flowed aimlessly over the river bottom, the valley, and it deposited a large amount of silt. So it was very, very fertile just all along the bottom of the North Fork Valley, and that's why the fruit was such a great choice. And Samuel Wade saw that, you know, that it was going to be a really successful crop.
That's great to know. It makes me think differently about the soil in my yard and my garden being close to the river. So, yeah, go ahead, Judy.
Oh, no. Oh, that's fine.
Well, I'm just imagining 300 railroad cars of peaches going out on these tracks, and then another big train, 200 cars full of apples going out. That's just amazing to me. That is a lot of fruit.
And cherries. That was always a major crop here.
Yeah.
And we might just bring up Paonia Cherry Days, which was began in 1946. And, of course, it was to just celebrate our fruit. And actually, all of the packing plants, they put together bags of cherries. I can remember as a girl being up there, we just loaded up bags, and they were freebie bags for everybody that came to the Paonia Cherry Days.
And you can still come and get cherries at Paonia Cherry Days.
Yes, you can.
It's a great tradition. 527-486-8186, KVNF Now. You have a few more minutes to make your pledge or give us a ring and join the conversation. What was a day like working at the packing shed? Because it could have been a good job. Judy, do you want to answer that?
Well, one year, I guess we were probably sophomores, and Claudia would have been a senior in high school, and they had abundant fruit and not enough people to pick. So they excused high school students to help in the fruit picking and packing. And my husband always worked every year picking, but Jody and I didn't. But we did that year, and we were abysmal. We were very bad. We tried, but we weren't the most wonderful packers you'd ever see. I think Claudia did a lot better than we did.
Oh, Judy, tell about how they wrapped each individual peach.
Oh, yes. We worked actually for the Wades and in their packing shed. And one of the fruits that we were working with were peaches. And each peach was individually wrapped in tissue and then put into whatever order that particular... Do you remember, Claudia?
It depended on the size of them, Judy, because, you know, the smaller peaches would have, there would have been more of them in a box. You know, the larger peaches, some of those, there probably were not more than six or eight just on the, you know, bottom of the box.
But there was a particular order that you didn't just toss them in. They had to be counted.
No. Yeah, I think there was actually a pad that went on the bottom of that box that sort of, you know, nestled the peaches.
Mm-hmm. But all hand tissue wrapped and
all
placed in there.
All hand tissue wrapped. Mm-hmm.
And my favorite position was the gate girl, and I was at the back of all of those packing bins. There was a sorter, and when they were sorted, then they came in on belts, and I would open the gates to the bins. And, of course, they were all sized out, you know, from large
to
small.
They were numbered, right? Am I remembering that?
Yes, I think they had a number on them,
yeah,
Judy.
According to the size.
And so I'd be running back and forth, because there would be, I don't know, maybe 20 bins that these are running into, and the packers,
wow,
you know, packing,
yeah,
them.
Crazy. And Judy, you used to put messages in your crates.
Yep. Hoping some stranger in a far-off place would communicate. Never happened, by the way.
That was early chat. Early chat. That's awesome. Okay, I want to thank Mike and Heidi from Ridgeway. They are new members, and we thank them for joining our KVNF family, and also Mark from Montrose. So thank you so much for participating today. Claudia, Judy, another favorite memory, Claudia, your dad ran the packing shed, or one of the packing sheds.
My dad was Palmer & Company, Peonia. Palmer & Company, actually, the main business was at Cedar Edge to start with, but my dad was picked up by Palmer & Company. At the time, he foresaw that there was going to be a trucking industry, and he had been selling sort of on the side to truckers. He'd go to an orchard and get them to you know, supply a trucker with fruit. So Palmer & Company picked him up, and he became the silent partner here in Peonia. And so he had the trucking business. When I was a senior in high school, I was typing all of these little postcards to send out. And he'd send them to Oklahoma and Kansas and different places, and inform them at the time the fruit was going to be ripe so the truckers could come and pick up fruit.
So he was a real go-getter.
He's quite an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And Judy, do you have a favorite memory of Peonia?
A favorite memory,
yeah,
of Peonia?
Uh-huh.
I love Peonia. I loved growing up here.
Yeah.
All of my favorite memories probably revolve around going out with my husband to be.
That's awesome. Well,
I'm sure he'd love hearing that.
Well, and he was a fruit picker. He has a history of that. Can you give us a little bit of that?
Oh, he actually picked, he would go and pick fruit before school and after school, before football practice or whatever, baseball or whatever he was doing. And he always used all of the money he made to buy school clothes, which I thought is quite commendable.
That's sweet. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, I think some of the fruit orchards were parking places, too.
Yes, they were.
Now, that's the kind of story we wanted to get to. Good stuff.
My husband, his dad owned some orchards on Pitkin.
So you're speaking from experience.
And I think Excelsior was another favorite for
for parking.
A lot of people. Yes.
There are many places you can park in Peonia.
Yeah, we like that. Would one of you ladies tell our listeners where the Peonia Museum is located and when they can visit you there?
The Peonia Museum is, if you are coming into Peonia from Somerset and cross the bridge, and as you're coming down the highway, you will see it on your, which side?
Be the left.
I'm on the left. Thanks, Claudia.
Uh-huh. Peonia High School on the right.
Thank you. Yes, it's by Peonia High School. If you're coming the other way, come down Main Street and turn and go toward the bridge, and you'll see the museum. There is the Peonia Museum, Bowie Schoolhouse Museum, and they're both full of wonderful, wonderful memorabilia from Peonia and from Bowie. And it's free, and we'd love you to come visit.
All right. Yeah. It's a great place to visit. And you can visit with these ladies and people that have good memories and can connect you with that history. So thanks so much for everybody listening tonight. And I want to thank Jean in Ridgeway, also a new member tonight. So thanks so much, Jean, for joining KVNF. And Claudia, Judy, such a pleasure to be with you tonight and have you share your memories. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill.
One Woman's Perspective coming up next. See you next week on As the Worm Turns. Thanks for listening.